Chapter 6. The Scent of Madness. Seeking through the falling snow for Dennell, Perrin found him at one of the fires and pushed between the horses. The other men straightened and backed away enough to give him room. Not knowing whether to offer sympathy, they barely looked at him and jerked their eyes away when they did, hiding their faces in their cowls. "Do you know where Massima's people are?" he asked, then had to conceal a yawn behind his hand. His body wanted sleep, but there was no time.
"About 3 miles south and west," Dennell replied in a sour voice, and tugged irritably at his mustache.
So the goose brains had been right after all.
"Flocking in like ducks into the waterwood in autumn, and a lot of them looked like they'd skin their own mothers."
Horse-faced Lemal Dai spat in disgust through the gap in his teeth he had gotten tussling with a wool merchant's guard long ago. Lem liked to fight with his fists. He looked eager to pick a scrap with some of Massima's followers.
"They would, if Massima said to," Perrin said quietly. "Best you make sure everybody remembers that. You've heard how Berylaine's men died?"
Dennell gave a sharp nod, and some of the others shifted their boots and muttered angrily under their breath.
"Just so you know, there's no proof of anything yet."
Lem snorted, and the rest looked about as bleak as Dennell. They had seen the corpses Massima's followers left behind. The snow was picking up, fat flakes that dotted the men's cloaks. The horses kept their tails tucked in against the cold. It would be a full blizzard again in a few hours, if not sooner. No weather to be leaving the fire's warmth. No weather to be on the move.
"Bring everybody off the hill and start toward where the ambush was," he ordered.
That was one of the decisions he had made walking back. He had delayed too long already, no matter who or what was out there. The renegade Aiel had too much lead as it was, and if they were headed in any direction but south or east, someone would have brought word by this time. By this time, they would expect him to be following.
"We'll ride until I have a better idea where we're heading. Then Gradier Niald will take us there through a gateway. Send men to Berylaine and Arganda. I want the Mayenners and Gael Donnan moving, too. Put scouts out and flankers, and tell them not to look for Aiel so hard they forget there are others who might want to kill us. I don't want to stumble into anything before I know it's there. And ask the wise ones to stay close to us."
He would not put it past Arganda to try putting them to the question, in spite of his orders. If the wise ones killed some of the Gael Donnan defending themselves, the fellow might strike out entirely on his own, fealty or no. He had the feeling he was going to need every fighting man he could find.
"Be as firm as you dare."
Dennell took in the flood of orders calmly, but at the last his mouth twisted in a sickly grimace. Likely, he would as soon try to be firm with the women's circle back home.
"As you say, Lord Perrin,"
he said stiffly, touching a knuckle to his forehead before he swung into his high-cantled saddle, and began calling out orders. Surrounded by men scrambling to mount, Perrin caught Kenley Mayeron's sleeve, while the young man still had one foot in his stirrup, and asked him to have Stepper saddled and brought. With a wide grin, Kenley knuckled his forehead.
"As you say, Lord Perrin, right away."
Perrin growled inside his head as Kenley tramped toward the horse lines, pulling his brown gelding behind. The young whelp should not grow a beard if he was going to scratch at it all the time. The thing was straggly anyway. Waiting for his horse, he moved close to the blaze. Fael said he had to live with all the Lord Perrining and bowing and scraping, and most of the time he managed to ignore it. But today it was another drop of bile. He could feel a chasm growing wider between him and the other men from home, and he seemed to be the only one who wanted to bridge it. Gil found him muttering to himself as he held his hands out to the flames.
"Forgive me for bothering you, my lord," Gil said, bowing and briefly snatching off his floppy hat to reveal a thinly thatched scalp.
The hat went right back on his head again to keep off the snow. City bred, he felt the cold badly. The stout man was not obsequious, few Camelin innkeepers were, but he seemed to enjoy a certain amount of formality. He had certainly fitted into his new job well enough to please Fael.
"It's young Talonvor. At first light, he saddled his horse and went off.
He said you gave him permission. If the search parties hadn't got back by then. But I wondered, since you wouldn't let anyone else go.
The fool? Everything about Talonvor marked him an experienced soldier, though he had never been very clear about his background. But alone against Aiel, he was a hare chasing weasels.
Light, I want to be riding with him. I shouldn't have listened to Berylane about ambushes.
But there had been another ambush. Arganda's scouts might end the same way. But he had to move, he had to.
Yes, he said aloud. I told him he could.
If he said otherwise, he might have to take notice later. Lords had to do that sort of thing. If he ever saw the man alive again.
You sound as though you want to go hunting yourself.
I am very fond of Megden, my lord, Gil replied.
Quiet dignity marked his voice, and a degree of stiffness, as though Perrin had said he was too old and fat for the task. He certainly smelled of vexation, all prickly and ginger, though his cold, reddened face was smooth.
Not like Talonvor, nothing like that, of course, but very fond all the same. And of the Lady Fael, of course, he added hastily. It's just that it seems I've known Megden my whole life. She deserves better.
Perrin's sigh misted in front of his mouth.
I understand, Master Gil.
He did. He himself wanted to rescue everyone. But he knew if he had to choose, he would take Fael and let the others go. Everything could go to save her. Horse scent was heavy in the air, but he smelled someone else who was irritated and looked over his shoulder. Linny was glaring at him from the middle of the turmoil, shifting her ground just enough to keep from being ridden down accidentally by men jostling to form ragged files. One bony hand gripped the edge of her cloak, and the other held a brass-studded cudgel nearly as long as her arm. It was a wonder she had not gone with Talonvor.
"You'll hear as soon as I do," he promised her.
A rumbling in his middle reminded him suddenly and forcefully of that stew he had scorned. He could almost taste the mutton and lentils. Another yawn cracked his jaws.
"Forgive me, Linny," he said when he could talk. "I didn't get much sleep last night. Or a bite to eat. Is there anything? Some bread? And whatever's to hand?"
"Everyone's eaten long since," she snapped. "The scraps are gone and the kettle's cleaned and stored away. Sup from too many dishes, and you deserve a bellyache that'll split you open, especially when they're not your dishes."
Trailing off into dissatisfied mutters, she scowled at him a moment longer before stalking away, glaring at the world.
"Too many dishes?" Perrin muttered.
"I haven't had a one. That's my trouble, not a bellyache."
Linny was making her way across the campground, threading a way between horses and carts. Three or four men spoke to her in passing, and she barked at every one, even shaking her cudgel if they failed to take the hint. The woman must be out of her mind over Megden. Or was that one of her sayings? They usually make more sense than that.
Well, as to that now...
Gil snatched his hat off again and peered inside, then stuffed it back on.
I have to see to the carts, my lord. Need to make sure all's ready.
A blind man could see the carts already, Perrin told him. What is it?
Gil's head swung wildly in search of another excuse. Finding none, he wilted.
I suppose you'll hear sooner or later, he mumbled. You see, my lord, Linny...
He drew a deep breath.
She walked over to the Mayenna camp this morning, before sunrise, to see how you were, and, why you hadn't come back. The first's tent was dark, but one of her maids was awake, and she told Linny... She implied... I mean to say... "'Don't look at me that way, my lord!'
Perrin smoothed the snarl from his face. Tried to, at any rate. It stayed in his voice.
"Burn me. I slept in that tent, man. That is all I did. You tell her that."
A violent coughing fit racked the stout man.
"Me?"
Gil wheezed once he could talk.
"You want me to tell her? She'll crack my pate if I mention a thing like that. I think the woman was born in Farm Madding in a thunderstorm. She probably told the thunder to be quiet. It probably did."
"You're Shambayan," Perrin told him. "It can't all be loading carts in the snow."
He wanted to bite someone. Gil seemed to sense it. Mumbling his courtesies, he made a jerky bow and scurried away, clutching his cloak close. Not to find Linny, Perrin was sure. Gil ordered the household, such as it was, but never her. No one ordered Linny except Fail. Glumly, Perrin watched the scouts ride out through the falling snow, 10 men already watching the trees around them before they were beyond sight of the carts. Light. Women would believe anything about a man so long as it was bad, and the worse it was, the more they had to talk about it. He had thought Rosine and Nana were all he had to worry about. Likely Linny had told Brianna, Fail's other maid, first thing on getting back. By this time, Brianna surely had told every woman in the camp. There were plenty among the horse handlers and cart drivers, and Kyrianen being Kyrianen, they probably had been eager to pass everything on to the men, too. That sort of thing was not seen with charity in the Two Rivers. Once you gained the reputation, losing it was not easy. Suddenly the men backing away to give him room took on a new light, and the uncertain way they had looked at him, and even Lem spitting. In memory, Kenley's grin became a smirk. The one bright spot was that Fail would not believe it. Of course she would not. Certainly not. Kenley returned at a stumbling trot through the snow, drawing Stepper and his own rangy gelding behind. Both horses were miserable with the cold, their ears folded back and tails tight, and the dun stallion made no effort to bite at Kenley's mount, as he usually would have.
"Don't show your teeth all the time," Perrin snapped, snatching Stepper's reins.
The boy eyed him doubtfully, then slunk away, glancing back over his shoulder. Growling under his breath, Perrin checked the stallion's saddle girth. It was time to find Massima, but he did not mount. He told himself it was because he was tired and hungry, that he wanted just a bit of rest and something in his belly, if he could find anything. He told himself that, but he kept seeing burned farms and bodies hanging by the side of the road, men and women, and even children. Even if Rand was still in Altara, it was a long way. A long way, and he had no choice. None he could make himself take. He was standing with his forehead sunk against Stepper's saddle when a delegation of the young fools who had attached themselves to Fail sought him out, near a dozen of them. He straightened wearily, wishing the snow would bury them all. Salanda planted herself alongside Stepper's hindquarters, a short, slender woman, with green-gloved fists on her hips and an angry scowl creasing her forehead. She managed to swagger, standing still. Despite the falling snow, one side of her cloak was thrown back to give easy access to her sword, exposing 6 bright slashes across the front of her dark blue coat. All the women wore men's clothing and swords, and usually they were twice as ready to use them as the men, which was saying quite a bit. Men and women alike, they were touchy with everyone, and would have been fighting duels every day had not Fail put a stop to it. Men and women alike, the lot with Salanda smelled angry, sullen, sulky, and petulant, all jumbled together, a scent that twitched uncomfortably in his nose.
"I see you, my lord Perrin," Salanda said formally in the crisp accents of Kyrian. "Preparations are being made to move out, but still we are refused our horses. Will you have this made right?"
She made it sound a demand. She saw him, did she? He wished he did not see her.
"Aiel, walk," he growled, and stifled a yawn, not caring a whit for the furious glares that earned him.
He tried to put sleep out of his mind.
"If you won't walk, ride on the carts."
"You cannot do that,"
one of the Tyran women announced haughtily, one hand tight on the edge of her cloak, the other on her sword hilt. Medora was tall, with bright blue eyes and a dark face, and if she missed beautiful, it was not by much. The fat, red-striped sleeves of her coat looked decidedly odd with her full bosom.
"Redwing is my favorite mount. I won't be denied her."
"Third time," Salanda said cryptically. "When we stop tonight, we will discuss your toe, Medora Damara." Supposedly, Medora's father was an aging man who had retired to his country estates years ago. But Astoril was still a High Lord for all that. As those things were reckoned, that put his daughter well above Salanda, only a minor noble in Kyrian. Yet Medora swallowed hard, and her eyes widened till she looked as though she expected to be skinned alive. Abruptly, Perrin had had all he could take of these idiots and their dog's dinner of Aiel bits and pieces and pure highborn jackfoolery. "When did you start spying for my wife?" he demanded. They could not have gone stiffer had their backbones frozen.
"We carry out such small tasks and errands as the Lady Fael might require of us from time to time," Salanda said, after a long moment, in very careful tones.
Wariness was thick in her scent. The whole gaggle of them smelled like foxes, wondering whether a badger had taken over their den. "Did my wife really go hunting, Salanda?" he growled heatedly. "She's never wanted to before."
Anger roared in him, flames fanned by all the events of the day. He pushed Stepper away with one hand and stepped closer to the woman, looming over her. The stallion tossed his head, sensing Perrin's humor. His fist ached in his gauntlet from its grip on the reins.
"Or did she ride out to meet some of you, fresh from Abila? Was she kidnapped because of your bloody spying?"
That made no sense, and he knew it as the words left his mouth. Fael could have talked with them anywhere, and she would never have arranged to meet her eyes and ears, light her spies, in company with Barilane. It was always a mistake to speak without thinking. He knew about Massima and the Shonchan because of their spying, but he wanted to lash out, he needed to lash out, and the men he wanted to hammer into nothingness were miles away. With Fael. Salanda did not back away from his anger. Her eyes narrowed to slits, her fingers opened and closed on the hilt of her sword, and she was not alone.
"We would die for the Lady Fael," she spat. "Nothing we have done has put her in danger. We are sworn to her by water oath."
"To Fael, and not to him," her tone added. He should apologize. He knew he should. Instead, he said,
"You can have your horses. If you give me your word, you'll do as I say and not try anything rash."
Rash was not the word for this lot. They were capable of rushing off alone as soon as they learned where Fael was. They were capable of getting Fael killed.
"When we find her, I will decide how to rescue her. If your water oath says different, tie a knot in it, or I'll tie you in knots."
Her jaw tightened and her scowl deepened, but finally she said,
"I agree,"
as though the words were being pried out of her. One of the Tyrans, a long-nosed fellow named Carlin, grunted in protest, but Salanda raised one finger and he shut his mouth. With that narrow chin, he probably regretted shaving off his beard. The little woman had the rest of these fools in the palm of her hand, which did not make her any less a fool herself. Water oath, indeed. She did not take her eyes from Perrin's.
"We will obey you until the Lady Fael is returned. Then we are hers again, and she can decide our toe."
That last seemed more for the others than him.
"Good enough," he told her.
He attempted to moderate his tone, but his voice was still rough.
"I know you are loyal to her, all of you. I respect that."
That was about all he did respect in them. As an apology, it was not very much, and that was just how they took it. A grunt from Salanda was the only reply he got, that and glowers from the rest as they stalked off. So be it. as long as they kept their word. The whole bunch had never done an honest day's work between them. The camp was emptying out. The carts had begun moving south, sliding on their sleds behind the cart horses. The horses left deep tracks, but the sleds made only shallow ruts that the falling snow began to bury immediately. The last of the men from the hill were scrambling into their saddles and joining the others already riding with the carts. Just off to one side, the Wise Ones' party began to pass, even the Guy Shine leading the pack animals, themselves mounted. However firm Danil had dared to be, or not, as was more likely, apparently it had been enough. The Wise Ones looked particularly awkward on horseback compared to the grace of Sionid and Masuri, though not so bad as the Guy Shine. The white-robed men and women had all been riding since the third day in snow, yet they crouched low over the tall pommels of their saddles and clung to neck or mane as if expecting to fall off at the next step. Getting them mounted in the first place had required direct commands from the Wise Ones, and some would still slide down and walk if they were not watched. Perrin pulled himself up onto Stepper. He was not sure he might not fall off himself. It was time to make this ride he did not want to make, though. He would have killed for a piece of bread, or some cheese, or a nice rabbit. "Are you coming?" someone shouted from the head of the column, and everything came to a halt. More shouts rang out, passing the word as if everyone had not already heard, and men unlimbered bows from their backs. Cart drivers stood on their seats, peering ahead, or leaped down to crouch beside the cart. Growling under his breath, Perrin heeled Stepper in the flanks. At the front of the column, Danil was in his saddle, and the two men carrying those bloody banners, but a good 30 were on the ground, coverings stripped from their bowstrings and arrows knocked. The men holding the horses for the dismounted men jostled about, pointing and trying to get a clear view. Grady and Niald were there as well, peering ahead with intent faces but sitting their horses calmly. Everyone else reeked of agitation. The Ashaman only smelled ready. Perrin could make out what they were staring at through the trees a good deal more clearly than they. 10 veiled Aiel trotting toward them through the falling snow, one leading a tall white horse. A little behind them rode 3 men, cloaked and hooded. There seemed to be something odd in the way the Aiel moved, and there was a bundle tied to the white's saddle. A fist gripped Perrin's heart until he realized it was not nearly large enough to be a body. "Put up your bows," he said. "That's Aleandra's gelding. It must be our people. Can't you see the Aiel are all maidens?" Not a one was tall enough to be an Aielman. "I can barely make out their Aiel," Danil muttered, giving him a sidelong look. They all took it for granted that his eyes were good, even took pride in it, or used to, but he tried to keep them from knowing how good. Right then, he did not care, though. "They are ours," he told Danil. "Everybody stay here." Slowly, he rode out to meet the returning party. The maidens began unveiling as he approached. In one of the deep cowls on the mounted men, he made out Furin Alhara's black face. The 3 warders, then. They would have come back together. Their horses looked as tired as he felt, near exhaustion. He wanted to force Stepper to run, to hear what they had to report. He dreaded hearing. Ravens would have been at the bodies, and foxes, badgers, maybe, and the light alone knew what besides. Maybe they thought they were sparing him by not bringing back what they had found. No, Fael had to be alive. He tried to fix that thought in his head, but it hurt like gripping a sharp blade barehanded. Dismounting in front of them, he stumbled and had to hold on to the saddle to keep from falling. He felt numb around the bright pain of holding on to that one thought. She had to be alive. Little details loomed large for some reason. Not one bundle fastened to the elaborately tooled saddle, but a number of small bundles that looked like gathered rags. The maidens wore snowshoes, rough made of vines and supple pine branches, with the needles still on. That was why they seemed to be moving oddly. Jondan must have shown them how to make them. He tried to focus. He thought his heart was going to pound through his ribs. Gripping spears and buckler in her left hand, Sulan took one of the small bundles of cloth from the saddle before she came to him. The pink scar running down her leathery cheek
twisted as she smiled.
"Good news, Perrin Ebarra," she said softly, handing him the dark blue cloth. "Your wife lives."
Alhara exchanged glances with Sionid's other warder, Terrell Winter, who frowned. Missouri's man, Rovere Kirkland, stared straight ahead stonily. It was as plain as Winter's curled mustaches that they were not sure it was good news.
"The others press on to see what more they can find," she went on, "though we already have found oddities enough."
Perrin let the bundle fall open in his hands. It was Fael's dress, sliced down the front and along the arms. He inhaled deeply, pulling Fael's scent into him, a faint trace of her flowery soap, a touch of her sweet perfume, but most of all, the smell that was her. And no hint of blood. The rest of the maidens gathered around him, mostly older women with hard faces, though not as hard as Sulin's. The warders climbed down, showing no sign that they had been all night in the saddle, but they held back behind the maidens.
"All of the men were killed," the wiry woman said, "but by the garments we found, Aleandra Kigaran, Megden Dorlane, Lasile Alderwin, and Arella Shigo, and two more, also were made Gashine.
The other two must be Bane and Chiad. Mentioning them by name, that they had been taken, would have shamed them. He had learned a little about Aiel.
This goes against custom, but it protects them."
Winter frowned in doubt, then tried to hide it by adjusting his hood. The neat cuts were like those made skinning an animal. It hit Perrin suddenly. Someone had cut Fael's clothes off. His voice shook.
"They only took women?"
A round-faced young maiden named Brienne shook her head.
"Three men would have been made Gaishine, I think, but they fought too hard and were killed with knife or spear. All the rest died by arrow."
"It is not like that, Perrin Ebarra,"
Elienda said hurriedly, sounding shocked. A tall woman with wide shoulders, she managed to look almost motherly, though he had seen her knock a man down with her fist.
"Harming a Gaishine is like harming a child or a blacksmith. It was wrong to take wetlanders, but I cannot believe they will break custom that far. I am sure they will not even be punished, if they can be meek until they are recovered. There are others who will show them."
Others. Bane and Chiad again. "What direction did they go?" he asked.
Could Fael be meek? He could not picture her that way. At least let her try, till he could find her.
"Almost south," Sulin replied. "Much nearer south than east. After the snow hid their tracks, Jundin Baran saw other traces. What the others are following. I believe him. He sees as much as Elias Machera. There is much to see." Thrusting her spears behind the bowcase on her back, she hung her buckler from the hilt of her heavy belt knife. Her fingers flashed hand talk, and Elienda unfastened a second larger bundle and handed it to her.
"Many people are moving out there, Perrin Ebarra, and strange things. This you must see first, I think."
Sulin unfolded another cut dress, this one green. He thought he remembered it on Aleandra.
"These we recovered where your wife was taken."
Inside, 40 or 50 Aiel arrows shifted in a heap. There were dark stains on the shafts, and he caught the scent of dried blood.
"Tardad," Sulin said, picking out an arrow and immediately throwing it to the ground. "Mia Goma," she tossed two more aside.
"Goshin." Those brought a grimace to her face. She was Goshin. Clan by clan, she named them all, except the Shido, dropping arrows until just over half lay scattered around her. She held up the cut dress, holding the remainder in both hands, then spilled them.
"Shido," she said significantly.
Clutching Fael's dress to his chest, her scent eased the pain in his heart and made it worse at the same time. Perrin frowned at the arrows jumbled on the snow. Already some were half buried in the fresh fall.
"Too many, Shido," he said at last. "They should all be bottled up in Kinslayer's dagger, 500 leagues distant. But if some of their wise ones had learned to travel, maybe even one of the Forsaken—" Light, he was rambling like a fool. What would the Forsaken have to do with this? Rambling when he had to think. His brain felt as weary as the rest of him. "The others are men who wouldn't accept Rand as the Karakarn." Those cursed colors flashed in his head. He had no time for anything but Fael. "They joined the Shido." Some of the maidens averted their eyes. Elianda glared at him. They knew that some had done what he said, but it was one of those things they did not like to hear said aloud. "How many altogether do you reckon? Not the whole clan, surely? If the Shido were here in a body, there would be more than rumors of distant raids. Even among all the other troubles, all of Amadisia would know."
"Near enough to be going on with, I'm thinking," Winter muttered under his breath. Perrin was not meant to hear.
Reaching in among the bundles tied to the ornate saddle, Sulin drew out a rag doll dressed in Cadensor.
"Elias Machera found this just before we turned back, about 40 miles from here."
She shook her head, and for a moment her voice and scent became startled.
"He said he smelled it beneath the snow. He and Jandan Baran found scrapes on the trees they said were caused by carts. Very many carts. If there are children, I think it may be a whole sept, Paranebara. Perhaps more than one. Even a single sept will have at least 1,000 spears, and more at need. Every man but the blacksmiths will pick up a spear at need. They are days south of us, perhaps more days than I think in this snow. But I believe those who took your wife are going to meet them."
"This blacksmith has picked up a spear," Perrin murmured. 1,000, maybe more."
He had over 2,000, counting the winged guards and Arganda's men. Against Aiel, though, the numbers would favor the Shido. He fingered the doll in Sulin's sinewy hand. Was a Shido child weeping over the loss of her doll?
"We go south."
He was turning to Mount Stepper when Sulin touched his arm to stop him.
"I told you we saw other things. Twice Elias Machera found horse droppings and campfires under the snow. Many horses and many campfires."
"Thousands," Alhara put in.
His black eyes met Perrin's levelly, and his voice was matter of fact. He was simply reporting what was.
5, maybe 10 or more. It's hard to tell. But soldiers' camps. The same men both places, I think. Machera and Baran agree. Whoever it is, they're heading near enough south, too. Maybe they have nothing to do with the Aiel, but they could be following."
Sulin gave the warder an impatient frown and continued with barely a pause for his interruption.
3 times we saw flying creatures like those you say the Seanchan use. Huge things with ribbed wings and people riding their backs. And 2 times we saw tracks like this."
Bending, she picked up one of the arrows and drew a rounded shape a little like a large bear's paw in the snow, but with 6 toes, longer than a man's fingers.
"Sometimes it shows claws," she said, marking them, longer even than one of the big bears in the mountains of mist. "It has a long stride. I think it runs very fast. Do you know what it is?"
He did not. He had never heard of anything with 6 toes except the cats in the 2 rivers. He had been surprised to find cats elsewhere only had 5, but he could make a safe guess.
"Another Seanchan animal."
So there were Seanchan to the south, as well as Shido, and what? White cloaks, or a Seanchan army? It could not be anyone else. He trusted Balwer's information.
"We still go south."
The maidens stared at him, as if he had told them it was snowing. Pulling himself up into Stepper's saddle, he turned back toward the column. The warders walked, leading their weary horses. The maidens took Aleandra's gelding with them as they trotted to where the wise ones were standing. Masuri and Sionad were riding to meet their warders.
He wondered why they all had not come to stick their noses in. Perhaps it was as simple as letting him be alone with his grief if the news turned out bad. Perhaps. In his head, he tried to fit everything together. The Shido, however many there were, the Shanchan, the mounted army, whether White Cloak or Shanchan. It was like the puzzles Master Luhan had taught him to make, intricate twists of metal that slid apart and slipped back together like a dream, if you knew the trick. Only his head felt muddled, groping at pieces that would not slide anywhere. The Two Rivers men were all mounted again when he reached them. Those who had been on the ground with their bows ready looked a little abashed. They all eyed him uneasily, tentatively.
"She's alive," he said,
and it was as if every man of them started breathing again. They took the rest of his news with a strange impassiveness, some even nodding as though they had expected no less.
"Won't be the first time we've faced long odds," Danil said. "What do we do, my lord?"
Perrin grimaced. The man was still stiff as an oak.
"For starters, we're traveling 40 miles due south. After that, I will see. Njald, you go ahead and find Elias and the others. Tell them what I'm doing. They will be a good deal further on by this time. And have a care. You can't fight 10 or 12 wise ones."
A whole sept should have at least that many who could channel. And if it was more than one? A bog he had to cross when he came to it. Njald nodded before turning his gelding back toward the camp, where he had already memorized the ground. There were only a few more orders to give. Riders had to be sent to find the Mayenners and Gildanen, who would be moving apart as they camped apart. Grady thought he could memorize the ground right there before they could join up, so there was no need to turn everything around and follow Njald back. And that left only one thing.
"I need to find Massima, Danil," Perrin said. "Somebody who can give him a message, anyway. With luck, I won't be long."
"You go among that filth alone, my lord, and you'll need luck," Danil replied. "I heard some of them talking about you. Said your shadow spawned because of your eyes."
His gaze met Perrin's golden eyes and slid sideways.
"Said you'd been tamed by the dragon reborn, but still shadow spawn. You ought to take a few dozen men to watch your back."
Perrin hesitated, patting Stepper's neck. A few dozen men would not be enough if Massima's people really thought he was shadow spawn and decided to take matters into their own hands. All the Two Rivers men together might not be enough. Maybe he did not need to tell Massima, just let him learn for himself. His ears caught a blue-tit's trill from the trees to the west, followed a moment later by a second that everyone could hear, and the decision was taken away from him. He was sure of it, and wondered whether this was part of being Taviran. He reined Stepper around and waited. The Two Rivers men knew what it meant, hearing that particular bird from back home. Men coming, more than a handful, and not necessarily peaceful. It would have been a crookbill trilling if they were friends, and a mocker's cry of alarm had they been clearly unfriendly. This time they behaved better. Along the west side of the column, every second man, as far as Perrin could see in the snow, dismounted, and handed his reins to the man next to him, then readied his bow. The strangers appeared through the scattered trees spread out in a line, as if to increase the impression of their numbers. They were perhaps 100, with 2 in advance, but their slow advance did seem ominous. Half-carried lances, not couched, but held as though ready to be tucked under an arm. At a steady walk, they came on. Some wore armor, a breastplate or a helmet, but rarely both. Still, they were better armed than the general run of Massima's followers. One of the pair out front was Massima himself, his zealot's face staring out of his cloak's cowl like a rabid mountain cat staring out of a cave. How many of those lances had borne a red streamer yesterday morning? Massima stopped his men with a raised hand only when he was just a few paces from Perrin. Pushing back his hood, he ran his gaze along the dismounted men with their bows. He seemed unaware of the snow hitting his bare scalp. His companion, a bigger man with a sword on his back and another at his saddle bow, kept his cowl up, but Perrin thought his head was shaved too. That one managed to study the column and watch Massima with equal intensity. His dark eyes burned almost as much as Massima's. Perrin thought about telling them that at this range, a Two Rivers longbow would put a pile shaft right through a breastplate and out of the wearer's back sometimes. He considered mentioning Seanchan. Discretion, Berylaine had counseled. Perhaps it was a fine thing, in the circumstances.
"You were coming to meet me?" Massima said abruptly.
Even the man's voice seethed with intensity. Nothing was ever casual on his tongue. Anything he had to say was important. The pale triangular scar on his cheek pulled his sudden smile crooked. There was no warmth in it anyway.
"No matter. I am here now. As you no doubt know by now, those who follow the Lord Dragon Reborn, the light to illumine his name, refuse to be left behind. I cannot demand it of them. They serve him as I do."
Perrin saw a tide of flame rolling across Amadicia into Altara and perhaps beyond, leaving death and devastation behind. He took a deep breath, sucking cold into his lungs. Fael was more important than anything. Anything. If he burned for it, then he burned.
"Take your men east."
He was shocked at how steady his voice was.
"I will catch up when I can. My wife has been kidnapped by Aiel, and I'm heading south to get her back."
For once, he saw Massima surprised.
"Aiel. So they are more than rumor."
He frowned at the wise ones on the far side of the column.
"South, you say?"
Folding his gloved hands in the pommel of his saddle, he turned his study to Perrin. Insanity filled the man's scent. Perrin could not find anything but madness in it.
"I will come with you," Massima said at last, as if reaching a decision.
Odd, he had been impatient to reach Rand without delay. So long as he did not have to be touched by the power to do so, at least.
"All those who follow the Lord Dragon Reborn, the light to illumine his name, will come. Killing Aiel savages is doing the light's work."
His eyes flickered toward the wise ones, and his smile was even colder than before.
"I would appreciate the help," Perrin lied.
That rabble would be useless against Aiel. Still, they numbered in the thousands. And they had held off armies, if not armies of Aiel. A piece of that puzzle in his head shifted. Ready to drop with fatigue, he could not make out exactly how, just that it had. In any case, it was not going to happen.
"They have a long lead on me, though. I intend to travel, to use the one power to catch up. I know how you feel about that."
Uneasy murmurs ran through the men behind Massima, and they eyed one another and shifted weapons. Perrin caught muttered curses and also yellow eyes and shadow spawn. The second shaven-headed man glared at Perrin as though he had blasphemed, but Massima just stared, trying to bore a hole into Perrin's head and see what lay inside.
"He would be grieved if harm came to your wife," the madman said at last.
The emphasis named Rand as clearly as the name Massima did not allow to be spoken.
"There will be a dispensation in this one instance. Only to find your wife, because you are his friend. Only this."
He spoke calmly, calmly for him, but his deep-set eyes were dark fire, his face contorted with unknowing rage. Perrin opened his mouth, then closed it without speaking. The sun might as well rise in the west, as Massima say what he just had. Suddenly Perrin thought that Fael might be safer with the Shido than he was here and now.